With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We should be dancing, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. The international break is underway and Stephen Davis could make history tonight. It's Thursday, 8th of October. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Andy Russell.
That's right, it's me, Marcus Speller. It's not Jules Breach. She couldn't make it in today, so I'm stepping in the void. I said, hang on a minute, Olivier Giroud has got his 100th cap. I demand that I put this to Jim Campbell. He is the second greatest goal scorer in France football history.
It's just a fact, isn't it? It's just a cold hard fact. Although, reports just in are saying that Michel Platini will be appealing it.
Is he allowed to? Is he still banned from football?
It doesn't matter if he's allowed to. He's going to do it anyway, isn't he? But generally, it doesn't go very well for him.
No.
So I think Giroud's probably safe with his record.
Oh dear. Andy Brassel, look at you beaming for steaming Oli Giroud.
Yes, I am. I'm delighted for him. Mm. I'm absolutely delighted for him.
He's going to go down as the greatest kind of okay player in history, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? His record is going to just... He's such a confusing player, Giroud. Because I love him. I want to make that absolutely clear. He's a brilliant, brilliant player. He's got so, so much to his game.
Yeah, he doesn't score that many goals, though, does he?
There is this thing around him that he just isn't quite in that top bracket. But gradually, you know, the second top scorer in the history of France. That's amazing. It's
gonna
good
be,
on him.
It's going to be amazing.
Get him a statue everywhere.
When he catches Thierry Henry, that's going to be amazing.
Think he will?
Yeah, definitely.
Is he 9 goals away? Obviously, the decision to retire from club football to concentrate on international football is looking...
Well, it worked for Michael Owen.
Intelligent every day. Yeah, it did. Sort
for
of.
A bit. for a couple of games, yeah. It's incredible. He also got his 100th cap as well.
What's amazing is his quality is nothing to do with his goals. It's what he does for other people. It's what he does for the team. I thought this recently.
But you say that he's the second top scorer in France.
But that's it. It's amazing that in the end, that what we think of him is going to be described by goals. Which that is the totally
it misses the point.
The totally weird bit. Utterly.
It's like a magic eye painting. That's really beautiful.
He did his best at the World Cup to try and put us off the scent of his goal scoring record. Yeah. What did he?
That was a tribute to Givarche, wasn't it?
I think so.
Because he's just got so much to him.
Yeah. I did. It was. You've got to love him. You've got to absolutely love him. Another big win for France. Andy, you're going to have a deeper dive in on the continent about France.
We shall.
And more. So do get yourself over to Football Ramble Presents to listen to On the Continent, because that will be extremely sexy, no doubt. Speaking of sexy, did you see Spain and Portugal faced off? Or more importantly, Ronaldo and Ramos faced off? And they're talking again, Jim. Did you hear about this? Apparently, when Luka Modric won the Ballon d'Or, he had the bloody sheer gall to win the Ballon d'Or off Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. Ronaldo was very, very angry about this. For some reason, Sergio Ramos got involved, and those two had a falling out.
Clash of the Titans.
And apparently haven't spoken reportedly for 2 years. But there was a picture of them in the dressing room after. Ramos had his top off. I think Cristiano Ronaldo had his on. So very strange.
That is unusual.
It is unusual, yeah.
But it's a still photo, so you can't actually tell whether they're speaking or not.
Yeah, that's true. But they were very happy. They were very cordial. But Pepe was there, presumably just to make sure.
To mediate.
Yeah.
Imagine.
The bouncer in the meeting.
Pepe is the cool head in the room.
Yeah, he's the United Nations of the peace. You know, who would have thought? Andy, you were aware that there was a falling out between these two fine gentlemen?
I was aware that it was reported.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been the first fallout that Sergio Ramos and Cristiano Ronaldo had.
I can imagine.
All that time at Real Madrid as the two alpha dogs, and Sergio Ramos only becoming more alpha as the days, months and years passed. I don't think it's particularly surprising, but I also don't think it's particularly indicative to say, well, they haven't spoke since... Like he left Real Madrid, because Cristiano Ronaldo has not spoken to most of them since.
Who
since
has he
left
spoke
Real
to?
Madrid?
You said most of them.
Well, I'm trying to think.
Luka Modric.
I'm sure he still sends probably a box of Maltesers to Karim Benzema at Christmas.
Yeah, Benzema is definitely
with a little note saying I still love you.
Yeah. Marcelo and Ronaldo are quite good mates. Is that the case?
Yeah, very good mates. Yeah, I think they were the first footballers, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been André Schürrle to do the dance to "Al Cielo Tu Pego" by Michel Tello to celebrate a goal.
Which one was that? Which dance is that?
I can't really show the listeners here.
Is that the foot one?
You're just going to have to Google it.
All right, maybe
but
I will.
But I think Marcelo and Ronaldo's performance of it was the most memorable.
Yeah.
No offence, André.
No, I'm sure he's not offended at all, because he won't have heard you say that.
I think you're making a big leap to assume that André Schürrle, now retired André Schürrle, is not a Football Ramble listener. I think now he's retired, it's more likely that he's going to be a Football Ramble listener.
True. What about that goal at Burnley for Fulham, eh? We have that and that only memory of him in a Fulham kit. But so 0-0 again, you'll talk more about that on the continent. Nice for Kepa to keep a clean sheet, though. And your man, João Felix, who you were waxing lyrical the other week, Mr. Sitter. Elsewhere in the international arena, Frank de Boer lost his first game in charge for the Netherlands. You see what happens when you get rid of Ronald Koeman? That happens, gentlemen. Frank said after the game that he had a bad feeling about the game. That was after the game. If you said that before the game, that'd be a bit piss poor. Be a bit Han Solo like as well.
It's also a bit redundant after the game. You should have a bad feeling. You lost. Mystic Meg.
What do you feel about that game? Well, I have a bad feeling about it. Why is that? Well, we lost.
Yeah.
Actually, that is quite Dutch. Mm. So that's probably how it went.
Very blunt one.
Yeah. When they were on a really bad run in Amsterdam, where they'd lost, I think, six in a row in Amsterdam. This was, I guess, pre-Koeman. I remember covering a game there against France where they lost. And speaking to Kevin Strootman afterwards and saying, you know, do you think you've got some sort of mental block with Amsterdam now? And he went, no, the grass is green, the ball is round.
I love that.
If you were talking blunt.
Absolutely unflappable. Yes. I love it. I can't get enough of it.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
Also, you have to say, in terms of direct comparison, it's bad Atlanta United manager versus good Atlanta United manager, because, of course, Tata Martino on the other side, who won the MLS Cup with them, it was his Mexico that won there.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, see, all makes sense in the end, Jim.
Yeah. So, do you think that this Koeman thing applies even if he leaves you?
Oh, yeah.
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 Just intrigued by
it's Everton and you're getting Big Sam. Big Sam is the antidote.
Yeah, he's the equaliser, isn't he?
Just saying Barcelona, just in case Xavi doesn't fancy it come the end of the season.
Sort your defence out.
Right. they won't go down.
No.
If he's in charge, you would definitely say that. Right, gentlemen, let's move on. Now, we've got some sort of unfortunate sort of bits and pieces to go through. You know, some Scotland players are not going to be eligible to play tonight because of testing positive for COVID and so on. In the second half, we'll look forward to the games more in a sort of, I suppose, tactical sense or whatever. But yes, this is a thing that's just going to run, of course, with this bloody virus and so on and so forth. But it's a great shame for Scotland because Stuart Armstrong, Ryan Christie and Kieran Tierney have been identified as close contacts, so must isolate for 14 days. So they're going to be a miss. But also in among this chat as well, and there was a few fans at games last night. I think there might have been a couple of thousand at Spain versus Portugal, and there are calls continuing for fans to be allowed back into stadiums in some capacity. Andy, what do you make of that?
I can understand, particularly you look at it in an English context, I suppose, when football fans are able to gather in a cinema to watch a Premier League game, but not actually in the stadium.
Outdoors.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's all linked to the governmental response on coronavirus itself. So I certainly have sympathy with football.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's... Like so many things surrounding the situation, I think there's an anxiety to make sure football is supported as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I do feel slightly uneasy about the taste aspect of saying, come on, there are so many other things to deal with. We've got to work on getting fans back in the stadium, as if that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think once you get down to League One and Two, of course it is an important thing. If you can get any people in, you know, that's going to be something in the pot and that could really affect the futures of those clubs. But I think I would feel more comfortable if the rhetoric was dialed back a little bit, because it's important. It's not the most important thing in society.
Yeah, I mean, the Premier League, the EFL, FA, Women's Super League, Women's Championship have all jointly called the government to allow fans back into stadiums, Jim. So there's obviously a huge appetite for this.
Absolutely. From within football there is, yeah. But I think the
concern
is, I guess from the government's point of view, it is that they're telling people they can't go to pubs past 10 o'clock and they can't do this and they can't do that. And then opening up stadiums as well looks kind of counterintuitive to that, doesn't it? So it's all a mess. And I think, unfortunately, fans being allowed back into stadiums is such a high profile example of public gatherings that whether it's safe or not, it's probably not going to be allowed because the optics are quite bad.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also you have to look elsewhere, just for us to say, they're open everywhere else. That's not really true because, you know, you look at, for example, the fact that it's regionalised in Germany. So you had like 9,000 in Dortmund at last sitting, but whereas Bayern have played two games behind closed doors, that Schalke at the last minute had to play a game behind closed doors. Then you look at the fact in Holland, they've shut the stadiums for another 6 weeks, like going back about a week and a half or whatever. So it's a constantly changing situation. I can understand why there would be some reticence to undertake reopening stadiums when they might have to be shut again straight away. The fact is the authorities should have been, and I'm not talking about the football authorities, should have been ahead of this you know, it's just one thing that another thing, I suppose, that's not been planned particularly well. But, you know, safety first, and we are where we are.
Yeah, I know that Kieran Tierney in particular is really frustrated by this situation, because he says that he's followed all the guidelines, followed all the rules. He's now got to isolate for 14 days. He'll miss the game against Man City, of which he will, you know, he's a really, really crucial player to be missing for a tie like that. And it is incredibly frustrating. Obviously, Scotland are playing Euro qualifiers, that's fair enough. I think, you know, if we're going to keep the sort of mechanics of football going, a certain amount of international football has to happen. But I just cannot see an argument for why there are friendly games happening right now.
It's mad. And I think
absurd.
The thing is, clearly, national coaches and national associations kind of feel the same way as well. You know, you look at the teams that people are putting out this week. It's absolutely baffling. And I think I understand there's a financial imperative to a lot of it in terms of TV deals, much as there is with a lot of football. International football is, I think, quite hard to justify at a time like this.
Because you're increasing the risks of people being exposed to things, and sort of, we're seeing it already. There are definitely going to be cases where players come back and are unable to play for whatever reason, and it's just an added hindrance.
At what point do you
needs.
Find out?
Exactly.
They're going to spread it first.
Yeah, indeed. Well, like I say, everybody, we will look forward or look ahead to the games that are happening this evening in the second half. Before then, turn our attention to something a little bit different. The idea of B teams playing in the EFL has surfaced again. I mean, I suppose for some people it's never really gone away, but this has been a chat that's been around for a few years now. Manchester City chief exec Ferran Soriano suggested that the inclusion of Premier League B teams in the wider football pyramid as the current EFL business model is not sustainable enough. Says there are other problems, the challenges of developing players in England where B teams are not allowed. We have development gap of boys that are 17 or 18. They don't find the right place to develop, and for example, they are taken from us by German teams who try to sell them back for a price which is 10 times what they paid. Now you can see where his motivations coming from.
You can only see his motivations. Yeah. It's barefaced, and I hate this idea.
Yeah.
I have to say I absolutely detest the idea of B teams.
But it'll help Manchester City, Jim.
You know what? I hadn't looked at it like that.
Help them save a few quid as well, which is what we all want to see. Isn't
I know.
It?
Yeah. Why can't you see it from someone else, specifically their point of view?
I hadn't thought about it. You know, I haven't been looking at it with my corporate head on.
Exactly.
That's the problem I've
got
here. And what I don't like about this is the certainty in Soriano's rhetoric, I suppose you would say. I find it incredibly worrying, because I think he's talking about it with a confidence that makes me think it probably will happen in a few years, particularly as we're in a situation where actually maybe financially it would help the EFL, and they need everything they can get at the moment. And
short term,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument for that, but long term, you have to bear in mind that, you know, we always talk about the Premier League as being England's international product that's consumed all over the world, and that we should be extremely proud of. Well, I always find, I've said this before, when you speak to people outside the UK on England's football culture, the thing that most people remark on is they think, I can't believe that you guys have football in the fourth and fifth division that's broadcast live on television and thousands of people turn up at.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that is an enormous asset that I think a lot of Premier League clubs and leaders don't even think
look
about
at the championship
and don't
itself.
Even care about. The championship is enormous.
Yeah.
But it goes lower than that.
Mm. You know, it does, yeah.
People find it amazing. Yeah. I mean, I remember speaking to Roman Vosolo when he was a French guy who's played most of his career in the lower divisions over here when he was playing at Leighton Orient. And he said, when you get mates over and they come and watch you at a game, they're like, holy shit, this is incredible. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I expected to come and see you with like 200 people. And we came and watched you at Brisbane Road with 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. And it's real football culture. And it's something that I think people are going more and more to find, to people from abroad to reconnect with a sort of old football culture that they maybe thought was gone. It's something that's immensely valuable to England's reputation as a football nation, I think, is incredibly short-sighted to overlook that. And that just won't be the same. I think to assume that there'll be the same competitiveness and the same interest once it's diluted with B teams, I think is completely wrong.
Diluted
England stands alone for a reason.
Yeah, I think as well. Like,
just to clip that in isolation. Yeah. All right, Andy, get your head out of politics.
I'm just trying to make friends with you, Marcus.
Yeah. Jim. If I can, you know, just add to what Lawrence has just. Sorry, if I can.
He's got the day off today. Leave him alone.
So you're right, Andy. Like, the championship, certainly in the past, has been within. Been among the top five most well-attended leagues in Europe. I think there's a point where more people were going to championship games than were to Serie A games. It's a really, really special thing. And also, there's so much riding on it, mm-hmm. as there is with any, you know, any second division, that to... Where do you stop it? If Man City get a team, do Man United get one? Do Liverpool get one? Do the supposed top six, are they all mm-hmm. eligible to have one? Like, how many teams do you throw down there?
And, I was about to say, Fulham get one, but then they might actually end up playing them.
Split into two clubs, might as well. Yeah. But yeah, you dilute is exactly the right word. I mean, that comes at the expense of a team. Perhaps what Soriano's assuming is that some clubs will go out of business and their league places will be taken by second teams of Premier League.
He's
teams,
obviously very concerned about.
Oh,
that.
He's very, very concerned. He's just a guy trying to find solutions, man.
Eventually, though, it's a slower death because if you do that, if the idea is it's a training competition rather than a competition
Absolutely.
In itself, people stop giving a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
People stop coming. People stop paying the price. You're charging on the gate. Now, I don't think the two ideas of being against B teams and, you know, I think you can think that there should be no B teams, and yet the EFL has to really sort itself out as an institution, and the clubs really have to sort out the way they do business. Yeah. It's not mutually exclusive.
Question's being raised, you don't therefore take any answer.
Everyone seems to be saying the Premier League needs to sort of step in and do something, and that's an understandable point of view because obviously that's where a hell of a lot of the money is. But the fact that, you know, Soriano is putting forward this idea where it's like, yeah, well, we could definitely help for a price, it's kind of insidious. Now, it's like
Dragon's really like Den, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But you're going to have teams fighting to stay in the division and fighting to get out of the division, and then what? You've got these, you know. Two or four or however many kind of effectively glorified friendlies in the middle of it.
But the thing is, he really showed his hand, though, because when he said about, you know, the development gap of 17 and 18-year-olds and so on, you said, well, I can sort of understand that. And then you know, as an England fan, you could even be kind of charmed into thinking, oh, well, would that produce more players? There are a number of players that have gone on to play for England and done good things. Not just England, but done good things when they've gone on loan spells in the EFL and so on and so forth. But then he goes on to say, and they're taken from us by German teams who tried to sell them back. You're talking about Jadon Sancho. You're talking about this player, that, and you think, like, oh, well, I see. Yeah.
I think he's talking about Jamie Bynoe-Gittens, actually.
He's talking about all of them, Andy. But B teams do operate in other countries, as you mentioned. You know, Spain's an obvious one, and Germany as well.
Yeah.
And that's an odd one because I totally see how Real Madrid and Barcelona have got B teams.
But they Bayern can't. Are the equivalent in Germany, aren't they? This sort of unstoppable machine.
They can't go above the third tier. Way.
Okay, so that's a bit different to Spain.
Yeah, is the other difference. Mm.
But how does that operate then? Does that seem to be a success? Is it viewed with suspicion and regret in Germany?
I think a lot of German football supporters look over at League One and League Two and think we'd rather have that. Mm. Definitely.
Yeah. Mm.
So, I mean, football is corporate now. It's naive to suggest otherwise. That's just it is just part of it, isn't it?
We've it's all not bought breaking into news,
it.
Is it?
No, well, exactly. But I would be really, really interested to hear from Man City fans on this and what they think of it. Like,
do any of them think
it's a good idea? Do you actually, you know, looking at where the club have come from and what the club means to the sort of the actual, to you as a fan? Like,
it's a conspiracy, Jim. If Arsenal wanted a B team, they'd get it.
You really think
that? I mean, you may have
a different dinosaur mascot.
If
on the table, I'd be up for it.
I'm just saying, if you're doing a call to arms with this kind of thing, you may get some problem replies like that.
Absolutely, but I'm genuinely intrigued to hear from anybody who actually does think it's a good idea that isn't just kind of, you know, motivated by their own club doing well.
I reckon there would be supporters who would take to it. I mean, you talk there about. Say Bayern B or whatever, Marcus. Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting point because you do have some supporters, for example, who would follow Bayern B because they feel that Bayern first team is a little bit too corporate now. Yeah. A bit like the people who went off and formed FC United of Manchester.
Yeah.
It's not like an AFC Wimbledon situation where they had to mm-hmm. form a new club because the other club had basically disappeared.
Yeah.
But they thought, no, we are reacting to what we see as the over-corporate nature of this club, and we don't like the way it's been running, so we want to run stuff on a different level. And so that idea of people going back to the roots and going back to a more, I don't know, real form of football in a term, I think you will get some supporters like that.
Yeah, you would. But so I didn't have that much of an opinion on this before we started talking, and now I very much am in your camp, chaps. You'll be pleased to know. But I just think to myself, if you are a football club who are in the top division, and you're big sort of corporate sort of thing, and so on, that's fine. That's inevitable. They've earned the success, or however they've done it. Fair. You don't want to hate success. You don't want to hate a club. You've got to move with it, and so on. So no problems with that. But you don't get to then have your kind of little indie outfit, or whatever you want to call it, your kind of grassroots outfit in a lower league as well.
And if you do, start from the combined counties league.
Yeah, well,
don't nick a place in League One or League Two.
Okay, fair enough. But okay. But I'm just saying that
follow the Salford City fairy tale.
Exactly. But for those clubs who are not the big behemoths of football and so on, they have the positives which the big boys don't have. They have that sort of thing that you just talked about, the more community feel, blah 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 blah. You can't claim both, essentially, if you are a Manchester City or a Chelsea or an Arsenal or whoever. All right, everybody, let's have a quick break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes to open the door to Amazon. Only we watch with Jesus the 25 minutes first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
And I was like taking all this negativity onto myself, and I did. I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Linvoy Primus, and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
Oi, oi.
Linford Grimes.
Love a bit of LP there.
Is he the first player named after an American alternative rock band that we've had introduced the second half?
I assume so, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, Andy. Now,
I look forward to John Jane's Addiction doing tomorrow.
Gentlemen, I have very exciting news. Very exciting news indeed. We've got an email jingle. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for emails.
Just email show at footballramble.com right now, so Peter, Vish, or Kate, or Jules, or Jim, or Andy Lou, all my kids can read it out. Well done.
Oh, God. Worth the wait. Worth the wait in the grand it probably cost him.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I yeah, it's good to know he's. I'm happy that he's not gone away from his original sound. You know, he's kind of
giving the people what they want, Marcus. Yeah,
he's staying true to his roots. He's staying true to his roots.
Yeah,
so there he is.
So on with the emails. Rick Duncombe in Kampala, Uganda, no less, has been in touch. He says, "Hi, Ramblers. Loving the emails on what people have heard during matches. I've got a little one that's a bit different. During my Sunday league days in Essex, we had an away game at Love Lane Boys. Around 6-0 down, their captain ran to the halfway line to mime a trumpet gesture and sing out a trumpet noise. I think that's what he means. Followed by charge!
Oh, I love
his
that.
Team lined up alongside him and proceeded to rush us en masse.
Excellent.
Sadly, the tactic didn't work as we simply played it over their vanguard line and scored past the stranded keeper who clearly wasn't in on it. They only tried this once in the game, though the organisation clearly showed it was pre-planned. I wonder if any other listeners have come up against other bizarre tactics in their days. Game ended 14-1. Their goal came after the ball bounced back into play off an oak tree without the ref noticing.
Love the show. I mean, we're going to assume that's true. That's marvellous. That rush that he talks about, that has happened. There's been similar things.
Mighty Ducks, right?
Mighty Ducks is a good example. One of the lads' dads who used to come and watch us play football always used to go on to us about, he wanted one week for us to do what he called the Scunthorpe Rush.
Right.
I may have mentioned this years ago on the Ramble, but
sounds like a dance craze from like 10 years ago.
Exactly. Like a Northern Soul or something. But apparently they did it. He said they did this in a game in an FA Cup match. He said it was against Liverpool back in like the 80s or something like that. I mean, if he's
Jesus, this is higher than the standard I expected.
No, I've got a better one than this. But just bear with me. So there must be footage of this because he wasn't at the game and he saw it. So there must be like some BBC archive footage if it's true. But basically, the idea was you kick off and then you launch the ball to the fullback, the opposition fullback, or in the channel, and then you all just rush him.
Yeah.
And he said that the fullback, whoever it was, I mean, I can't imagine a Liverpool fullback at the time like being particularly perturbed by that.
No.
But basically, they won a corner or something like that. However, if you're aware of Ali McLeod, was it, the Scotland manager?
Yeah.
1978, round then, who was a real character. There's a great book about called How a Team Lost the World Cup or something like that about Scotland in 78. And his Scotland side did this in a qualifier against, I think, Czechoslovakia. And they tried this rush against the fullback because he was a bit mad. And all the fullback did is just launch it over their heads.
Yeah.
Their man ran through a goal. He hit the post, so he didn't score. And everyone was like, Ali, what the... are you playing at, you know, this tactic?
Yeah,
so this has happened at a high level in professional football.
See, we should say when this was emailed in by Rick, the subject was the problem with Bayern's high line.
Yeah.
I love the idea of that. Could you imagine your tactics being just punt it out to Andy Robertson or Trent Alexander-Arnold and then just get onto him?
Yeah.
Wouldn't work, would it? It just wouldn't be absolute suicide.
They've got like a 40-yard head start. they can see you all coming. And the fact is, like, some of their players will be inside their own half, so they're all onside. Oh, dear. Sunday League footballers, give it a go and get in touch. That's what I would say. Email here from James Isles, who says, "Hi everyone, just adding my take to the Ozil situation. The line I thought was most interesting in his tweet was, 'For as long as I'm an Arsenal player.'" Mm-hmm. So basically he's saying to all the fans that if they want him to leave and get off the wage bill, then I'm taking Gunnosaurus with me.
It is an incredible it's an incredible power move. And you know what, I've got a theory on this that I mentioned earlier to you guys. I think he's being coached by his former manager, Jose Mourinho, in the ways of the dark arts. I think he might even be smoothing the way for to you know, cross the divide, run that contract down, have a season with Jose over at Spurs, proper two fingers to Arsenal.
I think that does make sense.
I can see it happening.
Yeah, well, of course, people are always looking at a way in which the financials would work so he could get a season or two back in the Bundesliga. I mean, if you went to talk about him going to one of his former clubs, Gunnosaurus would fit in really well at Werder Bremen.
He'd fit in well anywhere, Andy. He's the best mascot in the world.
Although it would look like he was naked when he was wearing their strip, wouldn't it?
That's true.
Well, all dinosaurs other than him are naked, as far as I understand it. So it's at least consistent.
All animals, really.
The standards were different 4 million years ago, Jim.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
4 million?
It's a bit longer ago than that. I sort of thought about the question. Yeah, fine. Email here. Last email for today. Alex Norman. "Hi, guys. Following the conversation yesterday about how anyone could be a mascot, I wanted to make you aware of an incident involving the Philadelphia Phillies mascot, who looks a little like the Arsenal mascot. While using the hot dog cannon to fire food into the crowd, the Philly Fanatic, great name, managed to hospitalise a woman by hitting her in the face with a hot dog. She's fine! Clearly the job of a mascot requires a certain level of skill and thus deserves £80,000 a year. Hopefully we don't see this anytime soon in the Premier League with pies at half-time, especially not at Fulham." Mm. Well, of course we won't see it for a while. There are no fans in the stands. But, I mean, my goodness, yeah.
Isn't that how Maud Flanders died?
Yes.
By getting knocked off the back of the stand?
Spoilers. You're absolutely right.
It's Homer's fault as well, isn't it?
It was a T-shirt cannon. Hot dog cannon? What is that? What are they doing?
I'm into the idea of that, got to be honest. You go to the game with your hot dog mitt prepared, and then you're fine.
I'm just worried that...
Do you not have a hot dog mitt?
No. Should I have?
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm just concerned that food will go to waste, Jim.
Yeah, fair enough.
Uh-huh. The only thing I've seen close to that is when you go for a burger in Russia at a pub. You know the sort of pub that would like serve you a burger on sort of a piece of wood.
Sorry, Andy, did you say when you go for a burger in
Russia?
In a pub in Russia, yeah.
Right, okay. No, I don't know that.
Well, basically, they bring you the burger out.
Of course, I don't know why I just acquiesced there. No idea.
They bring you a burger out, and they bring you a pair of black disposable gloves, like a tattoo artist.
Like you're
going to
murder
wear.
The burger. Like you're going to strangle it.
Pretty much. I mean, because, you know, loaded burgers can be quite a messy eat.
True.
It's actually very, very reasonable, although maybe not that environmentally friendly because they are rubber gloves.
It is a good idea because burgers are, neither of you will know about this, but burgers are generally a very, very good hangover food, or they're perceived as one, but they are a bit of a mess. So they do have a lot of admin in terms of your hands, a lot of hand admin. Gloves are a good idea.
Why are you having a burger for breakfast?
I've not got up for breakfast on a day like this. This is lunch best.
I was there in Menorca with you, Jim. Yeah, I should know better.
I wasn't there.
Fun Jim was there.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I hate him.
I bloody love that man, wherever he may be currently, in the depths of the real Jim Campbell or the fake Jim Campbell. Anyway, speaking of fun, gentlemen, international football is very much upon us, and of course England are playing Wales this evening
in an irresponsible friendly.
Yeah, well, but they haven't had international travel.
True.
So when you're saying about the friendlies, I understand the point about that. So England-Wales, as always, playing very much above the board. Jose Mourinho's messaged Gareth Southgate with an apology after calling him Gary Southgate. Now, he mentioned this, was it on Sunday before the Manchester United game as well? But he said, I had no issues with that. He only needs to get one Gareth right and he will score all the goals for him, which is, of course, Gareth Bale. So, again, wrong.
So what's the issue with it that it's just... like over familiar.
Yeah.
He just doesn't care, does he?
I think that's
the media are trying to just blow it into something. Come on. I've got enough problems with my own squad. Can I just get on with sorting that?
But if we'd have called him Gaz, would that have been okay?
I think so.
Because that's familiar, whereas Gary just seems like he doesn't know what his actual name is.
I apologise to Mr. Northgate.
Yeah, you've got to go all in or stick to what everyone calls him. You can't. Gary's too much of a halfway house. If he said like Gazzy Southgate, I think it would be like, well, he's obviously pissing around.
Gary's also a bit of a dead name, isn't it? There are no babies called Gary now. I think like there were no Garys born in the UK in the last year or so. So it's
really
What a comprehensive study you've done there, Jim. Yeah. No Gary's born in the UK.
Yeah, I honestly remember reading a headline to that effect.
If you've recently had a Gary, then do let us know.
Let us know, yeah.
But England, gentlemen, there has been some more sort of serious tones coming from old G Southgate about the players, of course, who attended Tammy Abraham's
surprise party
and so on. So there's been some pullouts from the squad and so on and so forth, as we know. But Southgate has said this last time when they were away in Iceland with the Foden and Greenwood stuff, and he said that a lot of the hard work they put in reconnecting the England side to the fans, the good work at the World Cup, and he said they went into the World Cup in 2018 relaxed, there was no off-field nonsense going on, it was calm, and he said if you compare that to one or two of the other teams where there was some off-field stuff happening, it did disrupt them. And so he's very keen to keep that calm, as you could imagine. There is a tournament, you know, hopefully still happening come the summer and next year. So there's some important football for England to be had. And Southgate also spoke about how they've got 10 players from that squad in 2018, which is funny, isn't it? It shows you how quickly things move.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
Only 10. And he said those 10 players were a big part of that, but a lot of the other players in the squad haven't been a part of that, especially some of the younger players. He said they don't have the credit in the bank, as he worded it, with some of the supporters and some of their behaviours. And he's very keen for those players to not just say, look, don't just kind of come in the slipstream of these players and then do what you want. So it's a strong message you're sending out.
Absolutely, but I think there is a danger, isn't it, that some of these players are so young, they don't understand that this has been the case, that these bridges have needed to be built between, you know, England and the fans of England and also the media to a degree. Like, it does feel a little bit like all of that hard work is starting to unravel, because there have been three incidents, really, if you include Harry Maguire's situation, which obviously is a little bit different and very complicated, but still is annoyingly sort of typical of how things used to be with England. And another worry I have is actually looking at that, the makeup of this current squad. And obviously he's taking the opportunity to experiment and, you know, bringing players in that haven't been involved that much before and younger players getting a shot. But I think if you ask Gareth Southgate what his starting lineup was likely to be for the first game in Euro 2020, I don't think he'll know now. And it really smacks of him him still not being sure what team he's going to pick and almost how he's going to play as well. And it feels worryingly late for it to still seem this way, because we were obviously hoping that, you know, we build on an amazing World Cup. The tournament being delayed is difficult.
Well, and a decent showing in the UEFA Nations League last time.
Yeah, absolutely,
as well.
But I like everything heading in the right direction. Doesn't maybe feel...
Jim, I like how you're towing the party line, you're still calling it Euro 2020.
But that, absolutely, yeah. I've just got
on board with that. It's his official name.
No, I know it is. I know it is. I'm just calling it the Euros.
Yeah, can we just do it? Can we do Euro 96 again?
Euros sort of B-side or something.
Yeah.
Andy, what about Southgate? There's talk about the formation. If you look at the players he's picked, it's a huge squad of 30. Because there's obviously three quite a busy international break for England. There's a lot of defenders in there.
Yes.
And there's not too many central midfielders, if you like. It suggests that he's going to go for a back three with some of the players he's picked in the formation against Denmark. And there's a lot of talk about a 3-4-3. I'm not quite convinced by that formation, looking at the players England have.
I'm not convinced that there's enough time to work on it.
Yep.
I think that's really the issue. Mm. And that's, you know, going back to what Jim was saying before about what's the possible justification for having international friendlies this week. Well, from a football perspective, if we take away all the other context, which is very hard to divorce ourselves from, and that is the most important thing, they've got so little time to actually work with these players before the Euros, and especially when you bear in mind how packed the club season is, and it's packed to quite unreasonable level in many cases, it makes it very, very hard. I think it's difficult to know what to expect, not just from England, but from a lot of other international teams. But when we talk about the changing demographic of the England team, on the whole, it's a positive thing, because we're having players of great quality step in. And you know, there's a challenge to a lot of the established places already. And I suppose that's an optimistic way of looking at the goalkeeper situation, for example, isn't it? But I think for the team as a whole, it is positive that there's so much talent jostling for position.
Yeah, I think with the idea of the sort of back three, clearly Southgate is concerned defensively, which is a shame because I think he said, you know, 4-3-3, England have had joy against some of the smaller sides. You look at the goal scoring rate and so on and so forth. But against the likes of Belgium, you know, the centre halves England have at the moment, excuse me, have not had a great time of it of late. So he played a back three against Denmark and so on, but the centre of midfield has always concerned me for England. You have to go back years. Now, I understand he likes the front three because you've got pace. And if you have a front three like them, an opposition side takes someone like Belgium, who could dominate England. They can't squeeze England that high because of the danger that perhaps Sancho or Rashford or whoever, you leave the back door open and they've got pace on the break. Mm.
For me, the main issue of England going forward is not actually the formation, it's the tempo. Mm-hmm. And something that was a problem going all the way back to Euro 2016 and before that, and actually has continued to be a problem under Southgate, is that they play with that Premier League throttle all the time.
Yep.
So you'll always hit this bit of a game where 60, 65 minutes in, England don't have any energy or ideas left in the tank. And that proved a problem. I think, you know, you go to the Croatia semi-final, that was the ultimate manifestation
of that
problem. When they could have been 2 or 3 nil up, if you go to, you know, they top load the game. And I kind of wonder if the situation that we're in, the fact that it's not possible to play like that for the whole season with the schedule the way it is, I'm wondering if the physical demands on the players actually rule that approach out, which would actually be to England's benefit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you go back to lots of recent tournament winners and you include France in 2018, definitely Portugal in Euro 2016, teams that realise we haven't got that much energy.
Yeah.
We've played 60 games this season. Mm-hmm. Let's play within ourselves.
Yeah.
Let's be a little bit more circumspect. Let's almost plod our way to victory. And that has worked for so many tournament winners in recent times. And if England can get a little bit closer to that model, even if it's by default, I think that maybe gives them a better chance going into the final championship.
I totally agree with you, Andy, but again, my concern is having those players, especially in the centre of the pitch, which is crucial when you want to dictate the tempo. But someone like Calvin Phillips, I know he's different type of player, but he does give England a slight different option.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that he's been promoted quickly.
Yes,
I think you've hit on it, Marcus. Mm. Absolutely, but you know,
I feel
interesting to see Ross Barkley playing in a sort of midfield position for Aston Villa, because when he originally signed, me and Vish talked about on here actually about how they would fit him and Grealish in the main team, in the same team, because you know we wonder is that the sort of player you expect both of those really want to pull the attacking strings, but obviously we've only got a tiny, if spectacular, sample size of Grealish and Barkley playing together, but you know it's maybe a window for Barkley. It could be quite interesting to see how he does for the rest of the season.
I would quite like to see this team set up with 8 defenders, Harry Kane and Jack Grealish.
Yeah,
like just go the ultimate platform. Go on, Jack. You know you've wanted this for a long time. We're going to make it absolutely perfect. But you've got a free roll.
Gallop.
There's Harry there for you know if you need a bit of help up top.
Yeah.
You know, just go on, go for it,
Jim. I think it's an option, and it will remain an option. But there are important games tonight. The European Championship qualifying, of course, a fair few teams involved. It's the sort of the semi-final stage, if you like, of the playoffs, one-off games. Northern Ireland away to Bosnia-Herzegovina. Of course, Scotland host Israel. Ireland away to Slovakia as well. So some intriguing ties. But England, really, though, if you turn our attention to Northern Ireland, they lack a Stephen Davis, don't they? that's what they lack. I mean, he could become Northern Ireland's most capped player tonight, which would be 120 caps, and that would take Pat Jennings' record.
Wow.
That shows you how huge that record is and how long that's been. Pat Jennings was asked about this. The tributes were pouring in for Stephen Davis. He's absolutely loved and well-respected for all those he's played with and against. But Pat Jennings said, I spoke to him when he equaled the record. I'm going back to him to say well done for beating my record. Now, I think Pat Jennings is very happy to see his record in one sense, but there's one word in this sentence which suggests to me that he's slightly miffed, and see if you can guess it. He's a lovely lad and a great little player for Northern Ireland. He deserves it.
Yeah.
Take out the word little, Pat, because you sound
Pat.
Needless to say.
Everyone's little if you're a goalkeeper.
Well, Addy.
Should go without saying.
Uh-huh. Whereas Ronald Koeman, when talking about Stephen Davis, said, big, big hug from me.
Lovely.
Ronnie Kay had to get in there, didn't
Ronnie
he, Marcus?
Well, he managed him, of course. But the real praise was from Pochettino, who managed him, of course, at Southampton. The talent of him I compare to football people like Xavi and Andres Iniesta.
Come on.
It's big praise,
come
Jim.
On.
You put him in the same level as this type of player because
and
of
you
this...
utterly undermine him. You make a nonsense of the tribute you're trying to make.
I think that what he means is he's the type of player that means something to a side and can look after the ball like these players.
Yeah, the one you look to in difficult situations.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Well, we wish Northern Ireland all the best. It's a tricky one against Bosnia-Herzegovina, as I say, but he could well win that as well. We could have Northern Ireland, Scotland and Ireland progressing this evening, which would be quite interesting. So all eyes on the playoffs there, because that actually does mean something, I think. There's 16 teams involved, and four of them will go through to the championships as well. Before we go, gentlemen, did you see that old Iggy scored for Inter Miami?
What a free kick.
Opened
what
his account.
A free kick.
Gonzalo. Do you remember when you discovered him, Jim?
You say this quite often, yeah. I remember just being baffled as to why people didn't talk about him more when he played for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But yeah.
When he played for Real Madrid.
Come to me if you want to know about the starlets of the future.
You want to know who's playing up front for Real Madrid, kid? I'll let you know. I'm pleased for him, Andy. He's had it. We were talking, I can't remember where, maybe it was on Patreon or on the Football Ramble itself. I felt a bit sorry for Higuain because he's often like quite derided in his homeland for missing big chances in big games.
And he's had a struggle with a lot of kits that don't fit him.
Yeah, exactly. And then he missed the penalty for Inter Miami the other week and the opposition were giving him plenty. I'm glad that he's opened his account.
He's got a bit of a thing. He needs to never miss a penalty again, because if you think of that
don't
penalty
take him,
miss and the ruck that happened afterwards,
yeah,
it was almost identical to the penalty he missed for Milan against Juventus, and then he had that complete meltdown afterwards. So either he needs to come off penalties, or for the good of it, the goalkeeper needs to do what Corinthian casuals used to do and just step aside and let him tap it in, because I don't want to see any of that.
I don't want to see that Corinthian casuals approach in football now, Andy.
Why not? Was not good in penalty shootouts, obviously.
It could bring up allegations, and I'll leave it there. But we're pleased for Higuain. He's off the mark.
Yeah.
So well done him. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to the Football Ramble today. Tomorrow's show, I'm back with Vish and Luke. We're going to be talking about England. England thrashing or getting thrashed or playing out a boring game. That's probably more likely of the three against Wales. And a lot more. So until then, say goodbye, Andy Brassel.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jim Campbell.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from me.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome,
I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.